podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Good evening and welcome back to another live episode of Red Tinted Glasses here on the Red Tinted Glasses studio. Callum can't be with us on tonight's episode, but I'm delighted to welcome back a guest of the show that's already been on this season and provided excellent insight into the upcoming opponents on this weekend. And I hope John won't hold it against me too much, taking one of his regulars off the SFF podcast as well. Laurie Finlayson, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thank you very much, Glenn. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. And indeed, I hope John, fellow Aberdeen fan, doesn't see me as a bit of a traitor, but it's great to be back.
No, great to have you on. And of course, we will get on to the game coming up at Rugby Park this weekend as the Dons head to Ayrshire looking to get a first league win under Neil Warnock and end what is a current fantastic run that you guys are on. But for the first part of the episode, because I mucked up hearing what Callum said, and he is actually working tonight, so he's not joining me to look back on the 2-2 draw against Hibs. You're going to kind of help me look back on that as... From my point of view, the Dons dropped yet more points from a winning position. A game we were absolutely comfortable at one point in until Nicky Devlin decided that he forgets how to defend and we concede a sloppy second goal. But yeah, just for me, completely frustrating to see points slip away yet again.
Yeah, it must be. Must be, well, I can only imagine how frustrating it is for the Aberdeen fan and how frustrating it is for Neil Warnock, because, I mean, going forward, Aberdeen look decent, of course, a certain man up front who, you know, for you guys is quite rightfully an absolute hero, and for as long as he's at Aberdeen, you'll idolise him, but at the back, Aberdeen do look ropey, to say the least. I mean, I remember when Nicky Devlin signed, everyone thought Aberdeen has made a brilliant acquisition, but it just doesn't seem to have worked out.
I think he's worked out in a sense, but it's moments like the weekend where, you know, I saw him maybe, you know, getting compared to the fact that, you know, we signed him from Livingston, a team that struggled to make the top six on a regular occasion. And if you sign a player from the bottom six, you get bottom six performances. And that for me was, I guess, a fair point. But I look at Kel Roos first and foremost, a goalkeeper that we signed from Derby County, and he did come with some degree of warning from Derby fans. And ever since the turn of the year, his performances have, you know, dipped considerably. You look back at the draw against St Johnstone, where we had the goal that we conceded. For me, the equaliser in the home game against Dundee, he's to blame. And then the distribution that we saw for the first goal at the weekend is extremely poor. Laurie, I don't know about you, but Willie Miller on the radio saying that he could have maybe done better and sells himself when Martin Boyle runs through on goal. Do you kind of agree with that?
Yeah, I would say that's a fair statement from Willie. I mean, Kel Roos is a goalkeeper who, as you say, maybe did come with a warning from some Rams fans, but he's someone who I kind of thought as an opposition supporter again would have been a good addition to Aberdeen, but over the past few years has been kind of a little bit patchy, and as you say, this year has kind of struggled, at least since the turn of the year. But again, distribution does seem a bit of a weak point of his, and we saw it all too clearly on Saturday.
I think it's quite ironic given the kind of abuse, I guess, online that Martin Boyle is subject to from Aberdeen fans, of course, being a local lad, that he opens the scoring, and unlike the game at Hampden this time, he times the run well to be onside. And again, we give ourselves a bit of a mountain to climb having to come from 1-0 behind, but for me the reaction to the way we went 1-0 down was really impressive. I do have to agree with Neil Warnock's post-match comments about the fact that it's the best that we've played under him so far I know it's only four games, so the pool's not exactly massive to judge on, but if we're taking steps on terms of levels of performance, we're going in the right direction. Unfortunately, the results still aren't quite there. But I think what is most impressive was the way we react and we get ourselves back into the game. And I know certainly coming up this weekend, Laurie, a player that you'll be very wary of, although hasn't scored against you guys yet this season, it is Bojan Miovski. I'm sure he'll be looking to add to his goals because it's been a couple of games without. But despite not scoring, heavily involved, excellent build-up play, and Nicky Devlin in the right place at the right time to get the Dons level.
Yes, indeed. I mean, Miovski, I mean, is a player who, as a Camarnock fan, I do kind of get the fear, but as you say, Glenn, we can probably take confidence in the fact that he hasn't found the net against us this season. And on Bojan Miovski, I mean, and I know Neil Warnock mentioned it post-match when he was talking to the media. I think his words were manslaughter when David Marshall, his goalkeeper, appears to wipe him out. So I'm assuming that Miovski has managed to shake that off all right, and unfortunately, we'll be in line to start against ourselves.
Yeah, no, I'm sure he'll be raring to go. I think the other thing that it impressed me in the way that we kind of came back into the game was the way we played in terms of moving the ball about against Hibs. I felt at times we were playing balls over the top for the likes of Bojan Miovski and Duke to chase down, but these weren't balls that we've seen previously where we were just lumping up the ball in hope rather than expectation. You could tell the runs were being timed from the forwards play. So I'm also interested to see, and I hate to sound a bit like Barry Robson, with the fact that Neil Warnock's now going to have a full uninterrupted week to prepare for this game coming up at the weekend, what that might mean for him to maybe implement some ideas and get a solid formation and tactics lined up. Because, like I said, we saw glimpses of that on Saturday, but again, we're just not getting that full 90-minute performance yet.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, of course, last midweek when you played Motherwell, I mean, it was 3-0 within what felt like a matter of minutes. You know better than me. It must have been something like half an hour. I don't know. And then, of course, Neil Warnock has to turn to his bench. But he obviously is getting some sort of response from the players. And he's just... It's a matter of time, it feels like, until it does click. I mean, I hope that it's not Saturday. But I mean, I have every reason to be confident in Kelly. But I just... hope it's not Saturday, but I know that time is going to come when the plan comes together. And in recent weeks, recent games, you are starting to see the likes of Duke be more involved in the game. So I'm sure on my last opinion in this podcast, I was slightly wary of Duke, but he has really been off the boil for a lot of this season.
Yeah, and he's certainly a player that Neil Warnock's kind of taken under his wing a little bit. I think there was a comment from Niamh McPherson on the last episode about kind of the way that Neil Warnock's kind of almost mollycoddling him and kind of treating him like a father-son role, and how Duke's warming to that. And we're getting to see maybe Duke back to his best. Another player, and I know you've got a keen interest in the Scotland national team, of course, this player is currently captain of the under-21 squad, whose future still remains up in the air come the end of the season. Conor Barron, for me, another player, personally, I thought did well at the weekend. I know a player that split opinion. For me, there was times he tried too hard on Saturday, and I can probably see why fans were getting frustrated, because there was cheap possession given away. There was a couple of times in the first half where he maybe tried a pass that wasn't on, and we gave the ball away to the Hibs player at the edge of the box, or allowed Hibs an easy attack. But for me, there was a couple of times in the second half, he reminded me a little bit of Callum McGregor in the sense that when he was running with the ball, he was always looking side to side, looking what was on, who was in and around him, what kind of opposition players were coming towards him. He always likes to spray a pass wide. And for me, yes, it doesn't always come off, but he's a player that doesn't look to shirk responsibility. And that's a player that I want to see in my team, not leaving the club in the summer. And I just hope that the club can come to some agreement with Connor for him to remain at the club. Because I think losing a player of that quality, certainly in possession in the midfield, with the likes of Graham Shinney aging a little bit, would be a big miss to Aberdeen just now.
Yeah, absolutely. Conor Barron, whenever I've watched Aberdeen, has looked, you know, mightily impressive. And, I mean, captain of the Scotland under-21 is no mean feat. Obviously, it does show that he is a bit of a leader. And, of course, considering you're comparing him to Graham Shinney, perhaps yourself, Glenn, and the Aberdeen fans might see him, if he sticks around, as a future Dons captain. I don't know. But he's someone who has always done rather well. And of course, there could come a time where you never know. In the Scotland midfield, you might have Conor Barron and then maybe Kelly's very own David Watson, who may well have, you know, traumatic memories for Aberdeen fans. I don't know, perhaps. But yes, it could happen. Barron is someone who is really impressive. And I remember not so long ago being asked about him by a Rangers supporting mate. Would he fit in at Rangers? And that question kind of did take me by surprise, because I didn't think he was really wanting to leave Aberdeen. But you never know, especially if his contractual situation is up in the air.
Yeah, I just hope that he doesn't join the likes of Ryan Jack and Scott Wright in moving to the dark side. I was going to say I don't think he would, but well, we've seen it happen too many times before recently. And obviously Sam Gordon kind of back in the point where I'm kind of trying to emphasise around Conor Barron, where he says he would 100% take an over-trying, in inverted commas, player in Conor Barron over a lethargic squad. And I think right now that's kind of the way this team's going. We're maybe just trying to do to do too much. And again, kind of based on Saturday, where he says things seem to be coming together slowly for Neil Warnock, just hope we don't run out of games before it's all good enough. And I think that's the worry right now for Aberdeen fans, and for me certainly the worry coming up into the game at the weekend. And quite telling that probably a couple of our big games this season, certainly between now and the split, come against yourselves in Kilmarnock, because I think for me this weekend it is a key marker to see where we are. A win certainly boosts momentum ahead of a home game against St Johnstone, and maybe gives the fans a little bit of confidence ahead of the upcoming Scottish Cup tie. For me right now, that Scottish Cup tie feels very much season-defining for this Aberdeen side. I don't know, for you, I suppose you're probably maybe a bit of a side distraction in your hopes for finishing fourth.
Yeah, it does almost feel like a sideshow, although Derek McInnes has made it pretty clear this season that he wants to win a cup. He basically said that from pre-season. So, I mean, it does feel like probably, well, both Kelly and Aberdeen will maybe feel like they're in for a realistic chance of going on and running the Scottish Cup. And, of course, Neil Warnock himself has been on record saying he wants a top six finish. And ideally, a Scottish Cup win, because of course, if I'm not mistaken, Neil has never gotten to a final, so obviously he wants to correct that little bit of personal history for himself. It's tough to call though, because I don't think Aberdeen, and I might annoy some listeners here, I don't know. I don't think Aberdeen will manage both of them. You may well, if you can, you know, get turn those draws into wins quickly, get a top six finish. But I don't think you'd be able to get a top six finish and win the cup, to be honest.
And it's an interesting point, because I was having this discussion with my pal Finlay, who's over in Perth, Australia. And I know we've got a lot of Aberdeen fans that tune in from that part of the world. And saying kind of how the run of certainly results for Aberdeen at this moment in time are really doing us no favours, because we'd almost be beneficial going win, defeat, rather than draw, because you pick up just as many points in that time. I guess the other question I kind of had for you as well, because obviously having a Killy fan on, before the game at the weekend, the Scottish Cup kickoff time was announced. The game will be taking place at 12:15 on the Saturday, live on BBC Scotland. Obviously, Aberdeen accustomed to having to go down to Ayrshire for 12:30 games, sometimes even on a Sunday on Sky Sports. Look, I'm not saying it's about damn time that Killy fans make the trip up north. It's never nice when a set of fans get shafted by TV. Unfortunately, we knew this was going to be the case when the game was, when we get to the quarterfinals and the BBC pick up two, because Viaplay will always pick up Celtic and Rangers. What do you think with the kickoff time being announced for that cup game? Do you still think Killy will travel in numbers? Because I have seen a few replies to the Killy tweet itself. A lot of fans maybe potentially looking to make a weekend of this game.
Yeah, I think plenty of Killy fans will still make the trip to Pittodrie. I mean, we're always, you know, incredibly well backed. And even, I don't have the figures to hand, but even when we were at Pittodrie last time, which was a midweek game on Iraq on a bleak winter's night, there was still a decent Killy contingent there. I don't have the attendance figures to hand, but I think we will still travel in numbers. Of course, the kickoff time is less than ideal, but I think you make a fair comment that, I mean, Aberdeen have had to travel, you know, down here enough times for the early kickoff, including of course earlier in the season when there was the one on Sunday, and it's hard because obviously the broadcasters are probably tied into these kickoff times. I don't know, but
I think I saw someone say as well for the BBC with the trying not to clash with the Six Nations coverage as well. So I'm not sure how much that's impacted, and maybe they as I don't know how much say both clubs had in that as well, and I don't know whether Friday night was an option and both clubs didn't agree to the Friday night either.
Yeah, I think it's one of these ones of, I don't really think there was an ideal solution, as you say. It was probably a Friday night, which I don't think is too popular in Ayrshire either. The Saturday afternoon that we've got, and we have the obviously potentially like a Monday night, which again would probably be even worse than the Friday. Obviously, you know, more people will having to maybe take annual leave, etc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think, I mean, a lunchtime kickoff Saturday or Sunday for me is never ideal, but Kay Coasters, who's glad to see you back on the podcast, has said that they've got their hotel booked, so they'll be making the trip up, and hopefully it doesn't end in the same way that the last trip up north ended for yourselves. Back on the game at the weekend, and the first half was a game where, again, chances fell for both sides. Jack McKenzie, a player who's really coming into his own in recent weeks, and I don't know if I could say it's maybe too late for in terms of winning player of the year, maybe up there for top three, because I think Boyan's going to absolutely run away with player of the year, but as I certainly said to Callum, between him and Dante Polvara for most improved. But Leighton Clarkson, unlucky, seeing an effort that he had come off the top of the crossbar, and Duke lost his footing when maybe shooting was a better option, and he tried to cut back to give himself more room. There was maybe a couple of times where we were guilty of just trying to be too clever, and I don't know how much that pays down to the fact that kind of the situation we find ourselves in, where we're desperate to get that result, that we're trying too hard. And I know you've probably experienced that on occasion, where you'd rather the player just takes on the shot than tries and plays the pass, because one pass is one pass too many.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that at times, even this season to a degree, but more so last, has been a bit of a thing with Kelly. Sometimes, we're sometimes guilty of walking it into the net. One of the, few exceptions has probably been a couple of goals that David Watson has got, including the one, at Coventry, and I think it was against St Johnstone, where he just hits it. Sometimes if you don't, if you don't buy a ticket, you're not going to win, as squishy as it is. Sometimes just have a go, see what happens. You never know, you could score a cracker.
Yeah, the one thing as well from the first half that I will also say in terms of kind of not in terms of Aberdeen was how poor David Munro and his officiating team were. One incident in particular. Well, there's actually probably a couple on both flanks. Leighton Clarkson was absolutely side down in front of the linesman on the main stand side, who just couldn't be arsed flagging, I think, and left David Munro to make the decision. And I'm pretty sure it was Will Fish. Duke got the better of him, passed the ball by, and Will Fish absolutely took Duke out. No booking. And then I think he picks up a booking later on in the second half. There was a couple of cynical fouls again for, I think Marcandos was on a booking. I think there was an injury time. He makes another really poor foul that is for me a booking. And that's before we even come on to the second half VAR decision. And again, I know he was lambasted for the way he handled the Dundee game with the kind of the way Mickey Mellon's son was in it. Not treated when he went down with a head injury. There's again a couple of examples of the game at the weekend where a couple of players were down with head injuries, and David Munro was rather happy to continue playing on, for which for me is not a good look. The good look for me though was the way the Dons started the second half, and a player who was probably not having his brightest of games at the time, but can pop up and create a bit of magic out of nothing, was Jamie McGrath, who poked home to give the Dons a 2-1 lead. And at that point, it really felt that things were taking a turn for the better for not only Neil Warnock, but the Dons team. And in a game where a win would have really boosted our chances of achieving that top six goal that, as you said, Neil Warnock harbours hopes of. At that point, for me, there was only kind of one team really there wanting to win that game and a team that was creating those chances. But if you don't take the chances, you're going to get punished. And for me, that was the frustrating thing. And the biggest frustration is the manner on which we concede the second goal, because I don't know, I haven't seen it back to see where the lines were drawn, because I was adamant that the Hibs left back is offside, but offside or not, Nicky Devlin, you've got to be putting that ball out. I mean, you'd be going apoplectic if that was a Kelly player doing that.
Absolutely. I mean, and as cliche as it is, it's a case of, playing to the whistle. It doesn't matter if the Hibs player is offside or not, or if the linesman can be bothered to put his flag up. If he's not flagged or the whistle's not blown, just keep going. I mean, it's so frustrating as a fan when you see it that way. Players stop just assuming the referee is going to blow the whistle. I mean, of course, only exception probably to that is in the case of, as it's happened with David Munro, as you say, maybe if there's been a head injury or something. But, if that just happened in normal play, I mean, that is infuriating. And I can imagine Neil Warnock's reaction to players doing that.
And I think that was Neil Warnock saying after the game as well, that he doesn't need to tell Nicky Devlin that he made a mistake. Nicky Devlin knows the mistake was there, and it was costly, and it was, I guess, kind of hero to zero for Nicky Devlin in terms of scoring the goal that got us back into the game at 1-1, and then ultimately being the player that cost us the 3 points by a real poor lapse in judgment and concentration as well, because we're not in a position where players can be cocky and almost try and fool a forward into dummying that they're going to head the ball out and leave it. And I suppose if you're a Hibs fan tuning into this, you'd just be delighted that Joe Newell remained switched on and didn't ground to lay the ball off for Hibs to equalise. I think as well, you know, for me, the reaction to going 2-2 was adequate, I guess. You know, I can't fault the players for trying to go and win it. Again, for me, in terms of the way that Nicky Devlin dealt with that situation, you know, John Keogh says our whole defence is a joke and has got no... I don't know, John, if you're meaning that the no confidence is in the defence or the goalkeeper. And I just wonder as well, because I'm sure Derek McInnes from... because he was up at the game in midweek against Motherwell. Yeah. We'll have seen how nervous Kel Roos was at dealing with balls on top of him or dealing with set pieces. I just wonder if Nicky Devlin didn't want to concede the corner because, again, how poor Kel was at kind of trying to command his area. So just thought, well, if I take a goal kick, we've got less chance of conceding. But didn't work that way. Do you think that does play a part for defences when they maybe don't trust their keeper as much? They do kind of make unforced errors?
Yeah, I think it does play a part because, as you say, if you're a defender and you know that your keeper is, you know, poor at, you know, dealing with crosses or dealing with corners, commanding his box, you'll probably try to, quote-unquote, help him out by, you know, avoiding conceding corners, whatever, but I mean, it just ends up having the kind of opposite effect. I mean, nervous goalkeepers, they're just, I mean, I'm someone who loves a goalkeeper to, you know, come out, you know, command the area. I mean, Will Dennis, as great as he's been, has never looked the world's most commanding keeper, but like, if you, you know, rewind a couple of years with Kelly in the Championship when you had Zach Heyman, who's now, you know, doing really well for St. Mirren, to his credit. We always had a goalkeeper who would be, you know, you knew that that box was basically his. You knew that he would be in control of it. And I think in terms of with Aberdeen and Kyle Roos being hesitant to set pieces, I think Derek McInnes will have picked up on that as we haven't been anyone near as effective from set pieces this year, but you know, sometimes we can look dangerous from them. Like at the weekend against Celtic, we did come close a few times from set pieces. Although I do kind of have a theory on that, and perhaps Glenn, you may be able to help me where this is misguided. I kind of think Tony Docherty was perhaps key to Kelly's set pieces, because if you look at Dundee now, are they not the best team in the league?
Yeah, that's a very, very fair point. He certainly knows how to set his team up well at set pieces, and you certainly can't rule them out. And Sam Gordon coming in and saying that Kel's drop in form seems to be accelerating. Anytime the ball is remotely heading towards our goal, he's sweating. I never thought I would see a goalkeeper that instills less confidence in me than Jamie Langfield did. But here we are, especially anytime a ball's put high onto him. And I just wonder, you know, I mentioned it after Barry Robson was sacked that somehow Craig Sampson seemed to evade departing the club. What's he done? You know, because Joe Lewis declined rapidly when he was at the club, and Kel Roos has done the same. So what is our goalkeeper coach doing to bring on any of these goalkeepers? So when does questions start getting asked to him? And before we kind of move on to the game coming up at the weekend, Skokes are keeping me right in terms of the onside, offside, saying Jensen played Hibs onside for both goals. How deep Richard Jensen was for the first goal, fuck me, is absolutely criminal. The way our centre-backs could not stay together in terms of keeping a line was infuriating beyond belief. For me, in that first half, Hibs' success, and again, I'm wondering if this is something that Derek McInnes and Kilmarnock will pick up on, was how far apart Richard Jensen and Jack McKenzie were constantly. Jack McKenzie a few times as well getting frustrated with the lack of tracking back from Duke. But I thought the gap between our centre back and Jack was really poor. For me, Richard Jensen is another player that's declined in recent weeks. I think he's pretty weak. I know folk that tune in regularly will know I'm a big fan of Angus McDonald and would have been liking to see Angus start after his performance on Wednesday night. I can only assume his lack of match fitness has counted against him. But what I saw from Richard Jensen, I don't really know why we couldn't have put on a calm, composed Angus McDonald for an hour and then given Richard Jensen the closing half hour when it comes to Angus breathing out his arse later on in the second half, because again, it's costing us goals, poor inexperienced play. Another, I guess, obviously the big talking point at in the second half was the VAR call on Bojan Miłowski. I just want to get your opinion on that decision, Laurie, and the decision not to award Hibs a penalty in the first half for the handball on Nicky Devlin. I called it at the time, live at the game. I thought we were in trouble with the Nicky Devlin one. And as soon as VAR started looking at it, I thought, well, I know what's coming. I have to say, absolutely stunned to see that decision not reversed. Likewise, stunned not to see David Munro at least advised to maybe have a look at the Bojan Miłowski one. I've seen more debate around the Nicky Devlin handball than I have Bojan Miłowski taking a punch to the head, or I think a sports scene saying punching the ball onto David Marshall's glove, which caused the punch to the head.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised as well, because if memory serves me right, Nicky Devlin's arm is up like in a, well, what the sports team pundits would normally call an unnatural position, and then he does motion his arm towards the ball, so it kind of did look like, at least in the current interpretation of handball, or at least since last week. Anyway, it seems as if that was going to be a pretty nailed on spot kick to Hibs.
Mm-hmm.
And as for the Marshall one, it's strange whether there was actually intent there. Only David Marshall will know, but he certainly caught him. And I mean, to be fair, David Marshall was probably lucky that he got subbed off and not sent off.
Well, I mean, if you look at that incident compared to, who was it that got sent off for yourselves? Was it not against Hibs?
Well, we had one against Hearts where Will Dennis gets a yellow, and he probably should have got sent off. I think it was one of the ones last week.
And that was an offside that maybe saved him in that situation.
Because I think it was Yutaro Oda from Hibs, probably Hearts, probably Graham Duffy or something, correct me. I think it was like Yutaro Oda, I think, was offside. And that's what we thought saved Will Dennis at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, it's weird. It's more proof, and I'm not trying to criticise Will Dennis there, but proof that, you know, goalkeepers really are a protected species. And I mean, you could probably make that argument about Craig Sampson, as you said a minute ago. I mean, I'll be honest, you were saying about having little confidence in Jamie Langfield in his time in the Aberdeen goal. I was the same with Craig Sampson. His time at Kelly, I just never really warmed to him at all. I mean, has Craig Sampson not been named on your bench a couple of times relatively recently?
Yeah, I think he was that's actually a fair point, because I think he's also, well, maybe not this season, but he was named at one stage a player coach because we were that short in the goalkeeping department. Yeah, I think certainly last season he ended up named on the bench. But the gap widens to Dundee in terms of the Dons hunting for that top six finish. And the task of getting into the top six moves to Ayrshire this weekend as the Dons travelled to face Kilmarnock. And Laurie was originally on just to help me do this part, but Callum was not here, so Laurie's ably stepped in to help me look back at the weekend's game. So thanks very much to that. I just want to, before we come on to the game in depth, I'm just going to pick up a couple of points that were raised kind of at the top of the show. Just go back onto a couple of comments. Forbes McFarlane saying, when you look at who we still have to play, we should be looking to finish in the top six, even though we've not been at our best this season. Forbes asks, what do we think? Obviously not knowing that Callum wasn't going to come on the show. And I'm kind of interested to hear an outside opinion on this as well. Personally, for me, if we fail to win this weekend, for me, the top six is all but done. I know we've still got the game in hand coming up against Dundee, but we're giving ourselves far too much to do. The fact that, you know, so far under Neil Warnock, we've only managed to beat Bonnie Rigrose. I'm not criticising Neil Warnock. Just it feels like, once again, we've not benefited from any new manager bounce. But certainly my feeling right now is I can't see that top six finish. But, you know, as a non-Aberdeen fan, Laurie, do you think Aberdeen can make the top six?
I'll be honest here. I don't think Aberdeen will. However, you've got to obviously try and be hopeful. Of course, Aberdeen are a club who in my mind almost expect to be in the top six, although of course there was, you know, a few seasons where, you know, that hasn't happened of late, and maybe I'm not necessarily capable of putting red tinted glasses on, if you will, but Aberdeen are a club whose aspirations are much, much higher than what looks to be potentially mid-table obscurity. I mean, in a way, I hope Aberdeen get top six, but I mean, it's hard because everyone, you know, in that top six has, it feels like we're all there on merit. Even, you know, the likes of, you know, Dundee and Hibs are obviously, you know, pushing as well. Hibs are probably, I feel like Hibs are more of a, you know, are more likely to let up than Dundee are at this point.
Mm.
And to me, from the outside looking in, you know, Hibs are actually quite similar to yourselves. And you maybe would have saw that at the weekend. Kind of,
yeah.
Same sort of problems are all right going forward, but it's the other way where they struggle, and it kind of seems to be similar to Pittodrie.
Yeah, and I think there was actually a tweet from a Hibs fan at the weekend where it said, we've got the nucleus of a decent squad, we just cannot get the best out of it. I guess you could copy and paste that for Aberdeen. Paul Donaldson, regular watcher of the show here on YouTube, saying, this season we failed to beat Kilmarnock, St Mirren, Hibs and St Johnstone home or away, and we failed to beat Dundee or Motherwell at home. With that record, we don't deserve to be in the top six. And a quick question for yourself, Laurie, from Paul. Out of the upcoming two games, if Killie were to win one of them, which one would you want? Would you rather the 3 points this weekend or getting to that semi-final at Hampden?
That is a tough question. Thank you very much, Paul. It's just, I think, I'm actually tempted to say, now, win the cup game and let you have the league game, because, and maybe I'm being a little bit, maybe I'm still a bit high from Saturday, I don't know. And the fact that St Mirren obviously lost to Livingston, I kind of feel like we are in a relatively comfortable position, dare I say. So you know what? I'm gonna get us to win the quarterfinal and hope we can, you know, right or wrong and get a win at Hampden.
Oh, that's fair. I'd quite happy take the 3 points right now, and stop me nervously looking over my shoulder at times and start looking up. So, certainly one that I'm sure, you know, maybe will be the discussion on the trip to the ground this weekend. But as I said at the top of the show, Laurie, Killie unbeaten, one defeat in 13 since the two teams last played, when, of course, Killie ran out 1-0 winners. And that defeat was against Rangers. And I think, you know, Dennett McInnes felt you were unlucky to even lose that game. What would you put down to Kelly's recent run and how impressive it's been.
Yeah, I think Keith in that run, a lot of times he's actually been, defensive solidity, the likes of, Stuart Finlay, who's been a fantastic to get him, back on loan for the season. I mean, to me, and I'm gonna say it, and again, this might annoy some Kelly fans, but I'm going to say it. He's the sort of guy that you would have expected to end up at a team like Aberdeen this summer. As much as he clearly loves it at Kelly, and this is what he's for third spell. But he's the sort of guy, a bit of a coup for Kelly to sign him in the summer, and he's done really well. Like him, Robbie Deas, who's hopefully going to be back from injury this weekend. And defensively, we're solid. And Daba as well. Corey and Daba has been outstanding as well. Defensively, it's a solid base we've really built from. And of course, in recent weeks, we've really, added some kind of star quality at the top end of the pitch as well. With, of course, Kevin Van Veen coming in, Greg Stewart, a man who's well known to Aberdeen fans, coming in as well. And of course, Marley Watkins is on a good goal scoring run. I mean, and I'm not trying to rub it in, but it doesn't almost feel like kinda you might be missing Mr. McInnes. I don't know. It just feels like we are kind of slowly becoming like a mini late 2010s Aberdeen.
Yeah, well, I mean, certainly with the levels of recruitment that Dennett McInnes is pulling out, you could argue that. Of course, Greg Stewart seemed the most obvious signing for Killie come the January transfer window, but I think the ability to pull off getting Kevin Van Veen is a real coup for Killie, as you say. Certainly, fighting off St Mirren, and for the two of you fighting for that kind of security in the top six, I think it's an excellent addition up top. I just wonder, kind of, well, can't be bothered makes a comment, obviously, on the back of the news from Sunderland today, where Mick Beale has lost his job. Dave, don't even think about it. Although I know he did offer Mick Beale the job when he was at Aston Villa before we went on to appoint Jim Goodwin. Would you be kind of surprised if there was interest from Sunderland in Derek McInnes, given the job he's done at Killie?
I mean, given the job he's done at Kelly, perhaps no, because I mean, Derek has been great. Of course, when he came in, his job was to get his up out of the championship, which he did. And last season was difficult. And there was a sizable, amount of Kelly fans who wanted him gone. I kind of always kept faith in Derek, but he's really, won the fans over with, the season thus far. But as for interest down south, it doesn't surprise me at all. And I'm almost sure that Derek was linked with someone's job before.
Yeah, I'm sure
Same
he was
thing,
during his time at Aberdeen.
maybe when, I don't know, Jack Ross got it, maybe. That's all.
Yeah, it rings a bell,
Okay. It does.
but I think that was at the time when they were still a bit of a basket case club and maybe didn't fancy the Netflix cameras following him around. But back to kind of Killie and obviously the recruitment that you did in January, how important was it for you to strengthen in that forward area? Because you mentioned about the kind of defensive solidity that Killie have kind of built on since the last meeting between the two sides. But for me, Killie always seemed to be defensively sound, but really lacking in the final third. There was maybe a bit of a reliance on Kyle Vassell and to a degree Marley Watkins in the early part of the season. Now, as you mentioned, Marley's come on to a bit of a game. But Killie now finally have options and quality options up at the top end of the park.
Yeah, we have really, improved there. And of course, as well, going forward, we've got Danny Armstrong and, of course, another former Don in Matty Kennedy, who again has been great for us. Although I must have committed some sort of sin. I've never, well, not never, but I tend to not be at Rugby Park when Matty Kennedy does something important, like score the winner against Celtic in December. I got the Sunday lunchtime game. I snuck out. That was due to be on the radio at HBSA, shameless plug. And literally about 2 minutes after I left the ground, Matty Kennedy scores the winner. And then it was Kelly against Hibs, you know, maybe 3 4 weeks ago. Matty Kennedy scores, and again, I wasn't at Rock Park to see it, unfortunately, that day. But I must have done something to annoy Matty Kennedy and a few
Well,
of his
that's fine.
wife.
At least if you're going this weekend, then we know Matty Kennedy won't score. And you know,
Yeah, so I'll tame Matty for you, but our forward. Anyway, so the musical box there saying Kennedy seemed lazy and uninterested at Aberdeen. He always seemed pretty good against us, though.
yeah.
But anyway, on to the other option for us, Armstrong. He's probably been a bit quieter in recent weeks, but I mean, he will hopefully go on to a game. But as for the guys that were brought in January, I mean, Greg Stewart and Kevin Van Veen are just getting up to speed. But having those guys in your squad is fantastic, especially when, you know, Watkins at what, 32, maybe can't be relied upon every week. And, you know, Kyle Vassell, there's always a little bit of trepidation around Vassell as he seems to still be carrying a bit of a kind of niggling injury. And there's always a bit of speculation of does he need to get an operation, etc., etc. I think it may be an old hamstring tear. He seems to be kind of playing through. And maybe when we have all this depth and quality, now is probably the time to send Vassell for said operation if he does need it.
Yeah, and you know, certainly Danny Armstrong, a player I would love to see at Pittodrie wearing the red of Aberdeen. But a player certainly both between him and Matty Kennedy that seemed to do an impressive shift at the weekend as Killie once again caused Celtic all sorts of problems. And it's nice that it's taken all this time for Derek McInnes to finally learn how to beat a and cause problems to a Brendan Rodgers side. It's just a shame he couldn't do that in the various cup finals he got us to. I know Celtic were a different beast back then, but it still hurts. When we look ahead to the game this weekend, given Aberdeen are a side in transition, I guess, or coming certainly to Rugby Park under a new manager in Neil Warnock, a manager that, as people are pointing out, is still getting to know the squad, trying to work out how to get the best out of this squad. What would be your fears from what Aberdeen are bringing down the road this weekend?
Well, as I've alluded to earlier in the show, I think my biggest fear would be Bojan. But of course, in terms of, you know, what that team as a whole will bring, it still feels to me a wee bit like, looking in, it still feels a wee bit like an unknown quantity almost, because we haven't really seen what to a kind of full extent what Neil Warnock is trying to do yet. As you've said, Aberdeen have only, you know, beaten Bonnyrigg and, well, lost to Rangers, which was a tough gig. And then, of course, drew against, you know, Motherwell and Hibs. Although the one thing you can really take from all of those games to a degree is that the team are willing to, you know, fight for Warnock, of course, especially, you know, last midweek coming from three down. I mean, you probably thought Aberdeen were dead and buried that night. And there was probably some Aberdeen fans heading for the exits.
I
And
was very close.
yeah. But I mean, it's quite clear that they are obviously buying into kind of Project Warnock, but obviously we're yet to see kind of fully what he wants to do. I think if he can sort of defence out, we'll start to see truly what a Warnock Aberdeen team looks like. But as I think a commenter said earlier on, won't it be just too little too late?
Yeah, and I think for me that kind of starts this weekend. And you know, Scokes are saying Mr. Box Office needs to get points on the board rapid. Yes, we've been doing that by putting points on the board with draws, but unfortunately the teams above us, yourselves, obviously St Mirren lost at the weekend, but Dundee, you guys keep winning games, so we need to be bettering these results if we harbour hopes of finishing in the top six. For me, the biggest maybe positive in the sense coming up to this week is that Neil Warnock does have that full week to work with the players, but more so work with a defence that just looks short of confidence. And what I took from the post-match comments from Neil Warnock at the weekend after the Hibs game was that he said that the defence have to be proud to and want that clean sheet. They have to earn that clean sheet. Clean sheets don't just come just given to you on a plate. And right now we're giving goals to opposition. We're not making teams earn anything that they're scoring against us. So for me, that's something I really want to see improved going into this weekend. And look, I know Killy are going to have that pace from Matty Kennedy and Danny Armstrong on the wings. They're going to have that physicality from Kevin Van Veen up front if he starts the game. Marley Watkins, we all know what he can bring. You've got, you know, Watson in midfield. We saw already at Pittodrie what he can offer, and I'm sure he'll still be bouncing off the walls after grabbing that equaliser at Parkhead at the weekend. This is a Killy side for me. Look to be going into this game full of confidence, and a team that certainly are getting the locals back on side as well, because certainly watching Sports Scene, the atmosphere that seems to be coming through from Rugby Park seems to be improving week by week, but also the crowds also seem to be picking up again down at Rugby Park.
Yeah, I think we're kind of potentially at the start of another kind of mini revolution in East Ayrshire. I mean, we have this season got the highest kind of season ticket total since I think it was in the late 90s. We've hit over 5,000 season ticket holders, which I know maybe to Aberdeen, who will, you know, always get well way more than double that Pittodrie every year. But at Killy, that is a good crowd. Plus, we are starting to see, you know, younger fans come along to games. You know, there's a safe standing section, which is filled with a wee ultras group now, section 1869, who, you know, make a fair bit of noise and are often picked up by the TV cameras now. And, you know, stuff like that makes a difference. And when is that an atmosphere around the place, it does filter down onto the pitch. I mean, Rugby Park is a good stadium for creating an atmosphere, but only when there's, you know, at least, you know, 5,000-6,000 people in it. When Rugby Park is dead, it's dead. It feels like it's only yourselves and the seagulls. I don't know if Pittodrie maybe is that problem, you know, when it's a bit empty, if you're there like a League Cup game and a friendly in July. All it is, like, you just feel like you're...
I certainly think, you know, kind of ahead of this weekend, you know, what will be interesting is kind of the approach that Killy take to this game. Will Dennett McInnes, I don't know if you share this, that will maybe look to kind of go for the jugular from the start, try and look to exploit that Aberdeen defence that is lacking in confidence. Will Neil Warnock try and put his Aberdeen side on the front foot? One player, though, that will not be making the trip to Ayrshire, of course, is Pat Habib Gay, who this evening joined Norwegian side Kristiansund on loan until July. The Norwegian side get their premiership season underway on the 1st of April, and Pat will spend until July with them, getting much-needed minutes under his belt. And when the Aberdeen hospitality industry seems to be closing left, right and centre, I can only put my thoughts with Prohibition at this moment in time after the loss of such a regular customer. $500,000 spent on him to, well, I think it was at one start at Helsinki. I'm just glad I was there. But look, hopefully he gets minutes and comes back for Aberdeen in pre-season and we see what that money was well spent on. But yeah, in terms of the approach to the game this weekend, Laurie, how do you expect Killy to approach the game from the start? Being the home side, do you expect Killy to come out on top in terms of like the start of the game? I mean, not result.
Yeah, I think I would like us to kind of come out like that, because I still feel like generally speaking, against Aberdeen, we need to, almost correct a few things. Like, of course, I think it was last season where at the Tawdry, Aberdeen scored against us from kickoff. And I'm not saying I wanted to score kickoff, although we practically did do that in the Scottish Cup against Dundee. But like, I do want us to go out and have a fast start. Don't fear Aberdeen. If they want to sit in, they can sit in. But I want us just to go for it.
Yeah, well, I don't want us to be sitting in and respecting Killie, in a sense. I want us to go there and show kind of Derek McInnes and Killie that we deserve to be in that top six. We want to be in that top six, and I want us to take the game to Killie naturally. I'm surprised it's taken me 55 minutes to mention this. But of course, the surface will undoubtedly have an impact on the game. Could be the last time, of course. As you said last time you were on the podcast, Killie are getting rid of the plastic pitch come the end of the season. So it could be the last time Aberdeen play on the plastic surface at Rugby Park. But in terms of the plastic pitches we've come up against, Aberdeen's record is probably the best down in Kilmarnock. Just in the last two meetings, Kilmarnock have suddenly found a formula to get the better of us.
Yeah, you always don't seem to struggle with the plastic surface. And just quickly, assuming you want it put back to grass, just to give you a bit of sad news, they think it's going to be the end of next season when it gets lifted. Yet to be confirmed, because we're waiting on planning permission from the council for our new training ground, which I would say basically looks like Cormac Park but on a small scale. I don't know. I'm assuming Derek McInnes has a fair bit of say over what goes in their training ground. Mm. It's like so similar, you can probably find that online. But as for the plastic, I mean, I want the grass back as well, for the record, although I do quite enjoy it against two certain Glasgow teams, Yeah, it's just, keep the pitch nice and dry, sticky, the ball doesn't move. Great. Anyway, as for Neil Warnock, I've just got this feeling that he won't like the plastic pitch too much. Would that be fair?
I think he won't like it, but I think he'll also make sure, unlike what we saw from Barry Robson, certainly on the opening day of this season against Livingston, where he used it as an excuse, it won't be an excuse. Look, there's, yes, not exactly the same surface, but we've got indoor pitches with a plastic surface. I just wonder how much Neil Warnock will be looking to maybe utilise some plastic pitches up here to get some of the players familiar with it. I just think he will have the squad as best prepared as he can, but not looking to use any excuse if the result wasn't to go the way that the majority of people tuning into this podcast will be hoping come 5 o'clock on Saturday. But Laurie, thank you very much for stepping in for the past hour to not only help me look back at the weekend's draw over Hibs, but preview the game coming up this weekend. It's been a real pleasure catching up and chatting all things Aberdeen, Kilmarnock, and I'm certainly looking forward to getting you back on the podcast again when the time comes around for the two sides meeting in the Scottish Cup.
Yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure, Glenn. It was no problem at all stepping in Callum's absence.
Yeah, seems to be a regular occurrence every time I do this show that I'm having to find somebody to step in for Callum's absence. But an able deputy. All the best for the weekend, Laurie. I know you're going to the game, so enjoy it, but not too much. And we'll see you next time you're on Red Tinted Glasses. For those that have been watching this video, remember to leave a like, subscribe, it's free to do so. And whether you've been listening on audio as well, hit that follow button and feel free to leave a review. It helps spread the podcast far and wide. So thanks very much for the continued support. Until next time.
Sports Social Podcast Network.